Heard about Anchor? It is the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your own phone or computer. Anchor will also distribute your podcast so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more podcast platforms. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today. All right, well, folks, this is a very, very big episode for me. Probably my biggest guest to date. Episode number 156 of YWC Football Talk. It's the one. It's the only. If you're a Patriots fan, which I hope you're listening to this, if you are a Pats fan like myself and like my guest, his name says Nick Fitzy Stevens, but we're calling him Fitzy. Fitzy, how are you today?
Griff Dog, what's up, my man? How are you? I'm so glad we were finally able to put this together. You are a patient, benevolent, and understanding Patriots fan, my favorite kind. You've obviously got immaculate taste, both in terms of the guests on your podcast, on the YWC, the Yowza Wild crazy podcast from WYWC here. Took a while for us to finally put it together. I appreciate your understanding and patience with the schedule. Here we are in the early throes of March 2022. By all accounts, we should be in the bleak midwinter of the NFL offseason. But instead, this probably was the wildest Tuesday that I can remember in the offseason. We're on the doorstep of major roster moves that will affect the New England Patriots for seasons, if not decades to come. Like, man, like the NFL takes no – they talk about no days off with the Patriots. But the God's honest fact is the NFL takes no days off. It is a 24/7, 365, perpetually replenishing brohemoth of sports fantertainment. And I'll tell you what, I can't get enough, dude. I can never, ever get enough. We've been to the playoffs every year since the Big Bang. We've watched six Super Bowls in our lifetime, and I'm thirsty for more. That's why my motto outside, just in terms of football, is like, you know, NFL football, there is no methadone for it.
No, there is not. That's why every time I talk football and I say why I love it, it's because it's a 12-month-a-year sport. Sure, there's some times where it's quiet, but what sport 6 months out from kickoff, because I actually realized that today, that we're 6 months away from the kickoff of next season, are we talking so in-depth and so passionately, not only about the team that we love, but about the league as a whole? That's the NFL. You don't get that with any of the other sports, even though one of those sports right now I'm not exactly happy with, but well, that's another topic for another day.
Yeah, no, baseball can't pull its very well compensated head out of its rosin filled ass right now. And the greatest thing about this Tuesday, where you have these massive shifts, players staying where they've played, generational players, planetary talents moving from, you know, one team to another, one conference to another. I love that Major League Baseball is throwing a pity party for itself. Like, oh, we can't figure out a bunch of these tiny little details about the game that should be so obvious for us all to figure out. And the billionaires and the millionaires can't figure out how to equitably distribute all of their revenue. So we're just going to lock ourselves inside our bedroom and we're going to play really emo music and we're going to cancel games and tell you guys that you can't come. Where? And then football is like, okay, bro, no problem. What we're going to do is 6 months away from the actual game, we're going to continue to steal the spotlight, the thunder, and the attention from you. We're going to get bigger, stronger, and cooler, and we're going to eat your lunch in front of your face. So fuck yourself. I mean, it's so awesome. It's so great. Like, literally, like, we should all be talking about, like, hey, Griff, did you see that guy the Red Sox brought up? He's like the ninth starter in spring, but I'll tell you, this kid's got a wicked heater on him, and I think he might be competing for either a back end of the bullpen spot or the fifth starter. And let me tell you, Rafi Devers looked like he was able to put down the pumpkin pie in the offseason. This kid's on the TB12 method. I think he's going to hit 50 dingers this year. Instead, it's like, baseball sucks, and wow, can you believe Aaron Rodgers did a 12-day cleanse and then got paid $200 million for being a miserable prick all the time? Holy shit.
Oh, do you mean that Aaron Rodgers did a 12-day cleanse that involved bleeding, vomiting, eating a weird amount of butter that made you shit and vomit yourself?
Sounds like my 2 weeks after Super Bowl 42.
Man, this podcast is off to an electric start, and I love it. But obviously there's all the big news today, but my main question for you is, how does the big news affect the Patriots? Like, at the end of the day, because I know the NFL is a cycle that never keeps going, but the world revolves around the new Patriots.
Thank you. Thank you very much. See, I knew you were coming from a good place, even though, you know, you're in a different country and there's an exchange rate on our, no exchange rate on your intelligence, on your passion, Griff. I appreciate that. How does everything affect the Patriots? Yes, because let's be honest, all roads lead back to New England. Anything that happens in the NFL has to somehow tie itself back to the Patriots. Like, no matter what happens, like Brian Flores brings up this massive transcendental lawsuit that could change the way coaches are hired and people are looked upon for their intelligence and their professional gridiron acumen for years to come. Well, Bill Belichick accidentally sent a text message that may have incited the entire thing or brought him to do the lawsuit. Tom Brady, this Rob Gronkowski may go over here, this, that, every single story, no matter what, the Patriots are somehow tied to it. And today, while Russell Wilson going to the Broncos and Aaron Rodgers staying put in Green Bay doesn't necessarily affect the Patriots directly, in a lot of ways it does, because now the AFC just got that much more difficult because the AFC West is lit. Holy shit. It's packed. I have never seen a conference. It immediately now became the wildest West I can remember in my lifetime. It's the best division in football. Any one of them could be a division winner, could be a wild card team, playoff contender, Super Bowl contender at this point as well,
yeah.
Which just makes the Patriots road back to the playoffs, back to the Super Bowl, that much more difficult. I also, just because I'm that kind of petty, sort of competitive, small, you know, like wide-eyed yet narrow-minded, judgy type of person, I kind of love the fact that Josh McDaniels woke up today, you know, in his temporary hotel before he and his family get their luxury residence out there in Las Vegas, and he checked, you know, insert name of football website here, and he saw Russell Wilson getting traded to the Broncos, and he was like, mother puss bucket son of a bitch. I thought I only had to go through Herbert and Mahomes. Now I got to deal with Danger Russ, Mr. Unlimited himself, and Herbie the Love Gun, and Patrick Mahomes. Holy shit. It just got that much more difficult for McD and all the Patriots coaches that he stole. Now the Patriots, when they play the Packers this year, and they're going to go back to Lambeau. Great take, by the way. If you can make it from wherever you are, or if any of your listeners and your audience get a chance to go, I would put that absolutely on my must visit, my tailgate list, my bucket football viewing experience. It's an awesome, awesome, awesome time. But yeah, now they got to go back through Aaron Rodgers again. Mr. Miserable is sponge frown sulk pants. They got to go back out there and take on the $200 million man. And it just shows you, like, for the Patriots years from now, if Mac Jones continues to develop and grow, it's going to cost that much more to keep him around. And we're watching the moves the Patriots are making too. Like, we now know for a fact that unless J.C. Jackson ends up traveling down the David Andrews highway, which was, I think I'm going to go somewhere else and get paid a lot more money. Oops, I didn't actually. Hey, coach, can I come back to play for you guys again? Oh, I'm not going to get as much as you told me I would. All right, well, something is better than nothing. I guess I learned a few things while I was here. J.C. Jackson's gone. They cut Kyle Van Noy. They were interested in Calvin Ridley. Now that deal is gone. So, you know, the Pats have been subtly making moves and making news this entire time. And as far as it goes with the big stories, like, yeah, AFC's tougher. We still got to play Aaron Rodgers again. And everyone keeps wondering, okay, you know, like the Patriots are like the doll, like in that meme where it just keeps getting poked and they're like, come on, do something, do something. You know, Belichick, for his lack of wearing sleeves, he's got something up there and maybe then some.
100%. And also too, because I saw this take last week from a lot of Pats fans, including Pats fan podcast you've been on, the boys of Patriots Nation podcast, who I'm close with on here.
I love those guys.
Yeah, all awesome guys. All been on here before.
Mm-hmm. None of them shower regularly. They all eat fruit roll-ups for breakfast and live in their mom's basement, and I friggin' love all of them. I would take a bullet through my middle big toe for sure for all of them.
And I saw Pat basically tweeting out that the Patriots-Packers game better not be in London, because obviously they have the Packers do play in London as a home game next year. If anything, if we're given an international game, rather be Mexico against the Cardinals. Look, Patriots, Packers, Lambeau kind of writes itself.
Oh, wouldn't that be great? Remember when Brady walked down like that cement walkway with the steel fencing around him? And it was like, and now, ladies and gentlemen, here is your champion, Thomas Edward Patrick Brady. And he just walked down And he was so, like, they played great in that game too.
33-8.
That was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal game. Cooks had a big touchdown on that game, if I remember.
I think Cooks did.
Yep.
Amendola
and
too.
Guskowski had a mammoth field goal in that game because they're like a mile and a half up in the air and you can hit one from 60. Yeah, that was spectacular. I've been to London, by the way. I highly recommend, not just, you know, for leisure, for family travel or for study abroad or anything, but like I went to go see the Pats versus the Rams in 2012. Cannot recommend people going abroad to take in a football game, an NFL game, let alone a Pats game, Griff. Awesome, awesome experience. There are such passionate, dedicated, diehard fan groups all over the world. Pats Nation is global. It really is a Pats planet. And the Patriots UK fan club, the Patriots fans of Germany who sent me the Mac fucking Jones sweatshirt that I love to wear that people keep asking me, where can I get that? Where can I get that? It's proprietary design from the Patriots fans of Germany. Like, they can't wait to hopefully host Pats fans in 2023. It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, obviously, if the Pats played the Packers in 2022 in England, but there are definitely lesser teams that would be a bigger draw for the Packers to play in London. But I highly recommend everyone make a point to travel internationally and take in the Patriots, because A, Pats fans all over the world celebrate differently yet similarly, and B, there's nothing like going to a game somewhere else and seeing someone come up and go, hello, I love football. And then you say they literally have a Chargers hat, a Raiders scarf, a Dolphins jersey, and then like Cowboy Zubas. And you're just like, how did this happen? Oh, you grew up watching Monday Night Football like a day later on like some like Sky TV or something.
Exactly, exactly. But no, I honestly remember, I remember the 2012 game because I believe they killed the Rams. I want to say like 35 or 45-7.
Slaughtered them.
And then Gronk had the infamous touchdown celebration with the spike where I believe he walked like the London guard. But no, I would love for them to go back to Mexico City. Then it's just like, ladies and gentlemen, your champion, Matt Jones. Yeah. And just walk down that thing. I remember that. That was a cold photo of Brady.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is your champion, the McCorkle. That would be and his coach, the evil one, Bill Belichick.
With Troy Aikman calling the game at the booth, because it'll probably be on Monday Night Football.
Oh, which would be awesome too. And who's going to get that gig, by the way? Who do you think?
The Fox gig or?
No, who's going to, I think if Fox just promotes their B team to the A team, if Joe Buck leaves and either goes to Amazon or Monday Night Football, because Al Michaels will go to one or the other.
Yeah.
And Mike Tirico moves forward with Chris Collinsworth.
Yep.
So if Fox naturally just promotes their B team, which is Kevin Burkhardt and Greg Olson, I don't think they'll miss a beat. That's a really good number two broadcast team.
I enjoyed them when they did the Pats-Colts game week 15. I thought they did a really good job.
I enjoyed every part of that except the game.
Same. I also liked – I know he's a GM now, but I really liked when it was Kevin Burkhardt and John Lynch back in the day. I always liked the two of them together.
Lynchy did a great job. Yeah, absolutely.
I even remember there was a random Patriots Bears game that was John Lynch and Sam Rosen. And for some reason, that's why I know Sam Rosen's the Rangers play-by-play guy, but
2014 on Fox, the Patriots kicked the holy crap out of the Bears in that game, just like they did in 2010 as well, which was a game I actually wrote something about for WEEI.com today because Brady was doing an NFT session, like a live Q&A. Talk about the most 2022 thing I can say. Yeah. Brady was doing an autograph Discord for his NFT company, that's Autograph, with Gronk, and he told a story about how before the Patriots played the Bears in 2010, Welker did a shot of Jack Daniels before the game to stay warm and tried to get Brady to do one, and he wouldn't do it. And that reminded me of Kevin Millar and the Red Sox doing him in 2004 before they beat the Yankees and went on to win the World Series. It's like, damn it. God, Welker doesn't get enough love in the first place, but now I think I love him even more because he was like doing cowboy up with the Patriot way. That shit's awesome.
Oh, I love it. I didn't know the Jack Daniels story, but I did know that 2010 and 2014 were both Patriots ass whippings, and then 2018 against the Bears was Kevin White not knowing where the end zone was, so thank God for that.
And Josh Gordon catching a pass and easily should have streaked to the end zone, but he was so out of shape he was gassed and got caught from behind. And Cordarrelle Patterson, Corduroy Peterman as we like to call him, ran a kickoff back for a touchdown. Ended up being a really sneaky good game.
I want to say that was called by Ian Eagle and Dan Fouts, who I
listen to this guy. You are all over it, Griff.
Who I have a bit of a thing against, because I feel like whenever he gets a chance to rip on Tom, he takes it. And I just don't like that. Like, you know how announcers just pick on a team for no reason? That's mm-hmm. just something I got to say. But with the Joe Buck thing, I could see ESPN trying to get him. I'm glad that I'm going to say this right now. I was never a fan of Brian Griese in the booth. I liked it. They'd done Steve Levy and Louis Riddick. Griese obviously is gone. He's on
the
San Francisco.
That would have been better. Yeah. Now he's the quarterback's coach in San Francisco, which, by the way, is another one of those like, ooh, I wonder why he's going to be in San Francisco. Could it be to work with his old teammate, Thomas Edward Patrick Brady, upon his mm-hmm. return? Huh?
A move mm-hmm. that John Lynch tried to get 5 years ago, but Belichick said, like, here's Jimmy Garoppolo instead. Right. When Garoppolo is going to go to the Commanders for 3 first-round picks.
That get out of here. Listen.
That's just me poking fun. That's me poking fun.
Yeah, listen, I don't know what you guys are drinking up there these days. I know the supply lines are weird all around the world, but Griff, if you're chugging Everclear before the podcast, you got to let me know, because I'm going to have to get something heavier than this single IPA that I brought to the party.
No, just water for me tonight, but the only thing I got that's near my desk is just this little nip of Pink Whitney.
Hey, listen, whatever floats your boat.
Yeah, exactly. No Everclear for this guy. It's a Tuesday night. It's a work night. But, no, that was just my big thing with the Monday Night Booth. I feel like they could try to get Joe and Troy. I feel like they could split them up, though. If we end up getting Joe Buck and, I don't know, Sean Payton on Fox, or, hell, Joe Buck and Kirk Herbstreit, who I'm a fan of, and I'm staring at his face right now because I read his book recently and I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see. That's something that's gone unnoticed until I followed Andrew Marchand from the New York Times, because he's the big sports media guy.
Andrew Marchand from the New York Post. Yeah.
By the way, what's
the name of Kirk Herbstreit's book? It Hurts to Be This Handsome.
Football Brotherhood. Football Fatherhood and College Game Day Saturdays.
That's way too long a title. It should just be called Meet Me on Herbstreit or something like that.
That's a great fantasy team name, but it is his handsome face on the cover.
Oh, Jesus. Look at that. God, he's so infuriatingly perfect, that motherfucker. That's what it should have been called. The title of Kirk Herbstreit's book should have been Infuriatingly Perfect, What It's Like to Be a Broadcast and College Football Motherfucker by Kirk Herbstreit.
Another Kirk Herbstreit fact I want to bring up that I was disappointed about during 2020, upon the many Patriot 2020 disappointments, were the Week 5 game originally that was moved to Week 6 against Denver was supposed to be, I think, on CBS, and then ESPN was going to do it, and it was Herbstreit and Fowler, and that's my favorite broadcast duo in all of football, so I was like, all right, let's go. And then I wake up Sunday morning to, oh, yeah, the game's postponed because of more COVID, so they are not doing it. And Chris Fowler's Instagram story is literally him at the hotel across, not across the street, across the parking lot from the stadium. I think it's the Renaissance?
Yeah.
So as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, man.
I'm with you, though. Like, I loved the one or two times, this and maybe one season's prior, where ESPN would end up doubling up, whether it was like the playoffs on Super Wild Card Weekend or whatever it was. And you'd have the Levy, Steve Levy, Griese, Riddick combo, or whoever was calling it at the time. Maybe it was like Booger McFarlane and Joe Tessitore or whatever it was. But then you would end up with Fowler and Herbstreit calling the second Monday night game or the alternate playoff game, whatever. They did a great job. It wasn't just about them being able to like call a whale of an LSU-Alabama game on a Saturday night, or, you know, Indiana or Ohio State or something like that. Like, they can just call football. I think Fowler does a dynamite job. I thought he was perfect as the College Game Day host, but turns out he's just as good at play-by-play. And I think Herbstreit, if he can keep up Thursday night and then take Friday off and then land at game day and then get on another PJ and then get to the game Saturday night, if he can do that and still maintain those million-dollar looks in his family life, God bless him. I mean, you only get so many opportunities to be a star, make the most of what you're worth, and get that bag in this life. And so if he can do it, do it. And Joe Buck, if he goes to ESPN, I'm a Joe Buck apologist, not a Joe Buck critic. I think the guy does an amazing job. Like, he'll literally call a Thursday night game and then do some baseball in between and then end up on Sunday football with Troy Aikman, and he's peerless across the way. Like, makes no mistakes, great calls, is able to like ride his own, like the volume and the emotional volume of his own calls and like be dramatic when he needs to and just nails the moment, has some signature calls. If he goes to ESPN and he's able to like work Sunday Night Baseball and do Monday Night Football or just do like a new game of the week for ESPN and also jump in with Scott Van Pelt on the Masters, you know, game, set, match, book it. Like I'm sold, you know, take my money, please. I think he and Aikman, who inarguably, I think had the greatest NFL season in 2021 for color analysts, would be a dynamite fit. And Monday Night Football would become, say, you know, without the Manning cast, would become must-watch TV again.
Exactly. Like, I like the Manning cast, but I felt like if you want to, like, watch just the game as background noise, you can do that. I just feel like with those two on, it's way too distracting. Even though Joe Buck did have a great insult to Peyton during the Bills-Patriots Monday night game this past year.
Oh, where, did he really? What was his burn?
I saw the video afterwards, but apparently Peyton asked him about, like, oh, so Joel, when the game gets boring, do you ever come up with things to say? And he's like, yeah, the last time I had to do that was the Super Bowl you lost to the Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, because they call that game.
I'm here for all the sick football burns, by the way. I celebrate all of them, especially if you've earned them, whether you're a great broadcaster, great player, super fan, what have you. I am here for all of them, if and so long as they are in good fun and good natured.
Exactly. You know what? Sometimes it's just like, it's like the guy on TikTok likes to say, be a man, the Boston be a man guy. But the other thing too with those two as well is I'm forever indebted to them because they called, I know this is the one from Super Bowl 49, which happens, was in Phoenix. Super Bowl 57 is going to be in Phoenix. Just saying, throwing that out there.
And this is the third Super Bowl that's going to take place in Phoenix. Again, Griff, we go back to like one of the topics at the start of the podcast, which is the Patriots can't help but insert themselves into the narrative of all the important storylines in the NFL. I mean, are they obviously going to be back at Super Bowl 57 in Arizona because you can't have a Super Bowl in Arizona without the Patriots? Natch. Duh. Of course it's going to happen. I already feel like I'm collecting the money that I bet on FanDuel the night the Super Bowl ended. Like, boom, sauce, done. It's happening. It's on. See you there.
Exactly. And then, what was my other point I was going to say? But then I'm indebted to them because guess what? Toss to White, he's in. Patriots win the Super Bowl. Brady has his fifth. What a comeback.
Verbatim. Verbatim. Beautifully done. And just like Al Michaels, and the pass is intercepted at the goal line. Malcolm Butler, unbelievable. Chris Collinsworth just said something like, yeah, I can't. Now, here's a guy who threw a shitty fucking pass on a terrible play call.
The best moment of that still is just the Malcolm go, Malcolm go.
Oh, like I mean, those are two words. Like prior to Free Brady, Malcolm Go was almost like the Roll Tide of Pats Nation.
100%. But that's all I remember. It was just Brady, Chris Collinsworth just basically ripping on the Seahawks for what they did. And also say, can I say, I have a take about Super Bowl 51, but I don't know how hot it is.
I'm here for it. Go for it. Aside from the fact that Kyle Shanahan literally shit the bed is like the worst play call. Like no one chokes in the big game worse than Kyle Shanahan.
I don't know if the Super Bowl comeback happens, if not for the Dante Hightower strip sack. I will stand on the hill of that was the biggest play of – or biggest turning point play of that game. I will die on that hill, even if he's not a Patriot come next week, because once Brady left, he became my new favorite Patriot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, he entered the pantheon of legendary Patriots, and he was wearing – in war, rather, because I think his days in Foxborough, at least as a player, are done as well now. He wore the number of another legendary defender, another legendary linebacker, like one that could and should have easily been retired for Teddy Bruschi. And Hightower honored it and maybe even furthered it. Three Super Bowl wins, just like Bruschi, but even bigger plays in those Super Bowls. A lot of Bruschi's signature plays came in the regular season, but freaking Dante Hightower, he was instrumental in all three of those Super Bowl wins. The big tackle alongside Patrick Chung and Akiem Ayers of Marshawn Lynch at the goal line, setting up the Malcolm Butler interception, number one. Number two, in Super Bowl 51, top five play in that game. You could argue a million different things. Without the pass to Hogan on third and 12 or third and 10 or third and 15, whatever it was from the 12-yard line with 2 minutes left. Without the Edelman catch. Without Trey Flowers' sacks. Without all these different things. You know, it doesn't happen. Just like the sliding doors and the way the ball had to bounce in the, you know, Rube Goldberg machine for the Patriots to be able to put that comeback together will never happen again in any game, especially for a team in the ultimate game like the Super Bowl like that. That just is never going to happen again. But the Hightower sack, if you had to pick one, nobody would argue with you. Nobody would say like, oh, Bourdignon, you're so freaking wrong. You couldn't spell wrong backwards if I gave you all five letters. Like I gave you a WRON on Wordle and you still couldn't figure out you dipshit. Like, no, it's a great choice. It's an absolutely phenomenal choice. And then in Super Bowl 53, when Brian Flores was the de facto defensive coordinator before he went to Miami, his defense was all over the field and he and Van Noy absolutely devoured Jared Goff in that game. So yeah, man, he's an all-timer, an absolute all-timer. He's a red jacket guy. Maybe not a Canton Hall of Fame dude, but he's a Red Jacket Patriot Hall of Famer and a total legend in my eyes.
100%. And there's also a couple other guys like that who are going to be Red Jackets one day. One of them, I don't know if they're Canton yet. That's Devin McCourty. But there is one that I will die on the hill of him belonging in Canton, no matter if he's a Patriot this year or if he retires, and that is Matthew Slater. Matthew Slater is a Red Jacket and Gold Jacket guy. I will die on that hill.
Yeah, I think Slater deserves it. You know, I know there are not a lot of special teamers in the Hall of Fame. There's only two kickers in the Hall of Fame at this point. Like, I think like a punter, two kickers, and a handful of special teamers. But to be the absolute best at what you did for over a decade, and because I like to take a lot of the intangibles as well, like what you did on the field, what you do in the game of football matters most. However, if you also end up representing the team well, serving the shield, you know, you got to take care of our, you know, we always talk about as Roger Goodell, we're going to talk about the integrity of the game. You know, the integrity of the game is the most important thing. You know, then who better to have, you know, upheld the integrity of the game for the last decade and a half than Matthew Slater, community leader, team leader, Walter Payton Man of the Year, perpetual nominee, Pro Bowler, All Pro,
Plymouth Rock that man.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't get that insurance gig that easy, my friend. He absolutely deserves Red Jacket, no doubt. But like Matthew Slater, he gets my vote for the Hall of Fame. And it's interesting because there ultimately may not be that many guys that go from the double dynasty run of the New England Patriots in all six Super Bowls in the Brady Belichick era. Whereas you can look at all these other dynastic runs, if you will, like the Steelers in the 70s and the 49ers in the 80s and the Cowboys in the 90s. They all have as many, if not more, guys in the Hall of Fame from those teams than the Patriots may have, which really just points to the fact that A, Brady was that good, B, Belichick did make that much of a difference, and C, it really was about having a strong middle class. I mean, the ideal of the way they went about building teams with the greatest quarterback and the greatest coach of all time and a couple great players, Pro Bowlers and planetary types of talent worked. It really did.
Exactly. 100%. You're right. You're right on all those fronts too. Cause like, if you look at the 70s Steelers, the amount of Hall of Famers, 80s Niners, 90s Cowboys, hopefully one day it's all Patriots and 2010 Patriots. But we saw Richard Seymour's just getting in now. They're already building the Tom Brady wing for 2027 or maybe 2030 at this rate. Who knows?
They're going to have to push it back, because I'm going to tell you, if I had to put my money on it right now, Griff, he's going to be in San Francisco this fall. I think Gronk and Brady both finish their careers where their childhoods began. Gronk does one final season painfully in Buffalo. Brady does one final season not so painfully in San Francisco. They each get to see their names on the jerseys they grew up rooting for, and then they meet in the Super Bowl, and we get to watch Brady finally play Gronk, and I'll kind of want to throw up and gouge my eyes out, but at the same time, it would be a hell of a good football game.
As long as the fans of Buffalo are, as long as I can see the tears coming from over the QEW, which is the highway that leads to Buffalo, I should mention, as long as I can see all of that, like I saw the smoke clouds forming when they didn't draft Connor McDavid in 2015, that's what I'll be most happy with. That's what I'll be happy with. Like when they all complained about no overtime in the...
make a friggin' stop.
That's the one thing.
How about just don't let the fucking Chiefs run down the field with 13... How about play defense with 13 seconds? How about squib kick the kickoff? How about actually don't coach with your head up your ass? Come on.
Or how about this? How about you convert three third downs in a row in overtime instead of bitching about D Ford being offside? That's the one thing I think Patriot fans love to point out that no one likes to acknowledge is that Tom Brady converted three third and longs in that overtime, which I believe one went to Gronk, I believe, one went to Edelman, and I'm blanking what the other one was. But
Hogan.
Hogan. That's right. I was trying to remember if Hogan was all on the team. I think after 2019 is when he left.
Actually, Hogan may have caught one in the fourth quarter that was ridiculous, and I think it may have been Edelman, Gronk, Edelman. It may have just honestly been all Bubs and Gronk at that point, like unstoppable.
Another great all-time call from my favorite guy who does the Masters, who does NFL football, when Jim Nance bases his touchdown Patriots, and it's hello Super Bowl, and you see Brady just jumping into. I want to say,
David Andrews ran through the end zone.
Bye, see ya.
Yeah, bye, see ya. And Rex Burkhead scored the touchdown. Rex Burkhead basically just carried the hammer the entire way over the final 15 yards after Sony had been the battering ram in the first half.
Yeah, and then Philip Dorsett had an unbelievable touchdown in that game as well.
He did. I know. Brady only threw touchdowns to Philip Dorsett during that postseason run, one against the Chargers and one against the Chiefs. It was so spectacular. That's one of my five favorite Patriot wins, period, that game. That game was just remarkable. I've been fortunate enough to have an association and relationship with the team for years now, them noticing my super fandom from social media and YouTube and everything, and bringing me aboard in a sort of like ambassadorial fanbassador capacity. And I've had a chance to go to some of these Super Bowls and create content for the team and be around them during these Super Bowl runs. And I rode in a duck boat parade. And I just remember thinking like, all right, I love this team so much. Please win this game just because I want to see you go to the Super Bowl. But also like, shit, I really want to go to the Super Bowl. I want to work this. This will be so awesome. Like, come on, you guys. Like, I don't care. I'm in my 40s and I still get like the childhood joy out of it. That's the thing. So long as you still like, if you can still get the same feeling out of watching sports or your favorite sports team, your favorite football team that you do or you did rather when you saw Star Wars for the first time, then that means like you haven't been affected so much or that you're still doing the right thing, like that it matters to you. You still have the love of the game. Like if you're watching the Death Star blow up for the first time, every time you see the Patriots score a touchdown, that's right on.
That's me and how I feel. Like I said before, it's why I love football. It's a sport I'd love to talk about the most. Even though hockey is still my one true passion. Like I'm Canadian. I kind of have to be that way. But football is just a sport I can talk about day in and day out. That's why I'm 156 episodes deep into this podcasting life now. Mm-hmm. But my big thing with football is, and the Patriots, is I remember for years I'd get people asking me, because I have friends, family who are fans of all different teams. They always ask me, oh, are you still going to be a fan of Brady, like when Brady leaves or retires? And I was like, yeah. And I stood by them morals. 2020, sat through the Patriots. It was what it was. Obviously, it sucked. 2021.
It was different, though. 2020 was different. Hey, that whole Cam Newton thing, it was different. Didn't work in the end, but like it was fun for a little bit. Then it wasn't. And then we just kind of like grinned and dealt with it, but like it was different. He was like, I'll always admire Cam Newton because he took the slings and arrows of an angry Patriots nation that just watched their favorite player and the greatest of all time walk out that door. And he tried, didn't work out, but he tried. And now there's hope in the form of Mac Jones. Like, now the McCorkle brings the hope, and he'll, I don't want him to be Tom Brady. I don't need him to be Tom Brady. I don't need the team to look like the old teams. I just want them to be entertaining. Distract me from the rest of the real world and all the other things that grind our gears and bring us down, Griff. I just want them to be fun. I just want to have fun watching football. And if they can make it to the postseason, God, I mean, they've won six Super Bowls.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell else do I mean? Most people are happy with a Super Bowl in their lifetime, maybe two championships at most. Six over two decades? Get out. Nikovich, please. Are you kidding me? I'm happy forever.
Same. I'm the same way. I can always look back on it and go, look, my team won. I got to witness six Super Bowl trophies in my lifetime already. It should be seven or eight, but that's another topic for another day. Damn Giants. My big thing with that is just, look, you're right. I can go and sit down on 18 games a year, the occasional Monday and Thursday, but majority of Sundays, sit there for 3 hours, be happy, be excited, be angry, be sad, emotionally invest myself into the game, like the Dallas Cowboy game this year. That was an example where
hell of a ride that was. Third, don't bring it up, Griff. I'm not ready for third to go back to third and 25 again. Don't give up 24 and third and 25. You had one job, Patriots. What are you doing? Come on, Jalen Mills.
I'm more or less referring to the Kendrick Bourne touchdown that.
Oh, Trayvon Diggs picks it off for six, and then on the very next play, Bourne for 75. Oh my God! You want to talk about just like. That was one of those games where, like with the Malcolm Butler play, you literally go from death row to the dynasty. You go from the poorhouse to the penthouse and the Playboy Mansion in just like a moment's time, like just by the flip of a switch. Yeah. And then the fact that they let him back in to score, tie it, and win it overtime. And Aguilar was open and should have caught the ball and cut overtime. See? And word is they might be moving on from Aguilar. I hoped it worked out. They overpaid him in the first place. They misread the market last year in the uncharacteristically aggressive offseason, paid him too much. Still probably could have worked. Maybe they signed him for Cam Newton and they ended up going with Mac Jones. But I'll always wish him well. Because, again, I'm in that sort of like appreciatory sort of life. You know, football life is gravy for me because, again, I've seen six Super Bowl wins. So thanks. But, you know, happy trails.
Exactly. That's because the one thing I also remember Aguilar for, too, is that he caught Mac's first touchdown. That's the one thing I'll remember him for. But I didn't mean to reopen any wounds. I apologize if I do. Sorry about that. But my big thing right now is, look, obviously we thought we had a chance at Calvin Ridley. I have, like, literally a bunch of banners I was going to flash up here and ask you about, like what, how do you feel about Mac? But you covered it. J.C. Jackson, I'm in the boat right now, like I was with David Andrews last offseason, where, okay, look, I'm prepared for him to come back. I'm prepared for him to go. But I think at the end of the day, he'll go out there, see that, you know what, maybe the grass isn't greener on the other side. I'll stay here, be cornerback one with Jalen Mills on the other side. Where I want to go with you is, who would you like to see come in? Who do you – where, like, what holes do you want to see get plugged this coming offseason? Like, I can show you – like, I literally can do this. See? Boom. Patriots free agent
targets. Let's do it. Run through them. Go.
Do you want to have sign with the Patriots? Like, do you want a receiver? Do you want a defensive? I'd say defensive line, but look, I know the defensive line fell off in the latter part of the year, and I now get a shiny Matthew Judon jersey I get to wear all next season with the red sleeves. I am not wearing that jersey unless I have sleeves underneath, and a Mac Jones jersey, and also too, I'm going to say it's Christian Barmore, one of the best picks of the draft last year.
Yeah, absolutely.
What a stud. My big thing is, if anything, retooling the linebacking core. I think, you know what, getting a wide receiver one and adding to the linebacking core, that I think is the biggest priority this offseason.
Yeah, my top priorities, and I've been less than completely unashamed to admit it, have been number one, priority number one has to be to re-sign the unspoken for MVP of the National Football League and inarguably the greatest player in the history of the franchise, if not the league. That's Nick Folk. You have 100%. To bring, got to get Big Kick Nick back in the Patriots uniform. Wildly underpaid last year, just $1.075 million. Guy has made his last 55 kicks from inside 50 yards. In 2020, he was the MVP of the team and continues to be one of their most valuable assets. I don't care if they got the mighty, you know, iron leg, the mighty Quinn Nordine on the practice squad. Resign Nick Folk. Now, getting serious down to the TAS brass, if you will. I know it's brass tacks. Just having fun, kids.
It's all good.
Number one, I wanted them to get my Mac Jones's development and speed at the second level of the defense were my two offseason priorities.
Yeah.
Top. Over re-signing J.C. Jackson, over getting another cornerback, even over signing some of the offensive line or fixing some of the holes there. I'd love for them to bring Trent Brown back. Ted Karras will probably go get a really big deal somewhere else. And isn't he glad he signed thinking he was going to get a one-year deal to replace David Andrews, only to shift over to left guard and stabilize what turned out to be a relatively decent line last year.
Didn't
mind at all. Hopefully Mike Onwenu gets his blank straight and has a really solid third year.
Yep.
Considering that Pro Football Focus always loves him. So my two priorities, continue with the development of Mac Jones. So do whatever you need to do in terms of coaches, in terms of mentors, to help him cerebrally, to help him on the field, to help him understand the schemes and the game plans. And then just give him the best possible assets you can. So that's why I wanted them to trade for Calvin Ridley if he was back in the game. I still want them
next year.
Yeah, exactly. Or if he shakes free of that garbage suspension that the commissioner gave him just to try to prove a point and drive the hammer home. that he doesn't want people gambling on the game. $1,500 We're like, that's why the biggest joke on Twitter yesterday was, wow, Calvin Ridley is such a shitty gambler. Bet $1,500 lost $11 million. Terrible odds.
We also bet on the Falcons.
Yeah. So I would like to see the Pats find a way to either get a security blanket or a number one receiver for him just to make sure that he has somebody else to go to, because like Aguilar didn't work out. I love Bourne. I don't know how much further they can stretch him, but I think they can integrate him in the game more. Jonnu Smith was the fifth Pirates of the Caribbean movie of a tight end, just an absolute disaster with too much money spent on it. I like Hunter Henry as much as the next guy who loves, chicken parm, but they need just that, some, whether it's a Welker type or whether it's like the Steph Diggs type, because obviously that proved to be a massive, massive, massive addition and a huge key to unlocking the potential of Josh Allen. So that's number one. And number two, and I think we're seeing it. They let Van Noy go. They probably won't re-sign Hightower. They're going to fold. It's going to be Josh Uche time. You're probably going to see more of Ronnie Perkins, who basically got a red shirt freshman year, this rookie season, the same way Trey Flowers did.
Cameron McGrone.
Who would have been a second round talent, but went in the fifth because he tore his ACL. This is his time. So get some more speedy linebackers, get some more middle and second level speed. Going to have to draft a cornerback to replace J.C. Jackson. They've had a lot of luck reaching into the nickel candy jar and coming out with full size candy bars, finding, undrafted free agent corners like Malcolm Butler and J.C. Jackson and turning them into all pros. So hopefully they'll be able to do it again. But speed at the linebacker, wide receiver, maybe it's someone in the draft. I love this kid, Sky Moore. I love John Mechie out of Alabama, who's also coming off an ACL. Probably get him in the second round. He can work the slot and on the outside. These are the guys Matt cooked with before. Let them cook together again. Let them cook together again. Let's get the kitchen back in order, Griff.
I also got to say this. I don't make these rules, but one of Slade Bolden or Britton Covey from Utah are going to be Patriots. I don't make the rules. That's just how it is. I love the additions. Like, I like John Mechie too. He's actually from up here. My fiance went to high school with him for his first couple of years, or she either went to high school with him or not went to high school. They went to the same school, but nice. She knows his older brothers who play in the Canadian Football League.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then, so that's just a little fun. So I want him to be a Patriot just for that reason, to kind of cheer on, because obviously the last Canadian born Patriot probably isn't working out that well. Sorry, Nikhil.
Can we just be done with that at this point? Like, can we just do our, like, let's just cut bait. Let's just let it go. Like, at this point now, we can, like, let's stop trying to make it work. Like, no need to force the relationship anymore. We got behind him. We were hyped for him. I just want him gone so that we don't have to deal with the whole, like, but we could add AJ Brown. Oh, what about DK Metcalf? Like, every time I see Debo Sam, every time a Debo scores, a Nikhil cries. Like, it is just, he wanted to be a Patriot. He was the perfect Patriot. So was AJ Brown. Bill whiffed. He shit the bed on the pick. Let's just move on. The Pats had such a good draft last year. There's so much promise and potential on the people they brought in and the people that hopefully are to come. I like the brain trust. Let's just not keep reminding ourselves of the time that we were on a date with the hottest chick that we were ever on a date with, and we decided to like get a steak sandwich and go home, as opposed to like, finish the night in the limo. Come on. It was so bad. God damn it. Oh my God. Nikhil Harry. Why?
But I'll say this. I'll say this too, with the 2021 draft class, David Andrews yelling Mondre repeatedly is good for the soul.
It is. What a find that kid was too, huh? Yeah, and James White said Devin McCourty said he's likely going to come back. He's training to come back.
Yep.
James White wants to play football again this year. Like, great. Okay, let's get the right mix of veterans, but also still make sure that they get younger and faster and more explosive, like Gerard Mayo said at the Super Bowl, where they need to. I trust him. I imagine you do too.
Yep.
We should, right? I mean, they got the resume. They got the legacy. They got the championships to prove it.
And soon they'll have a huge scoreboard in both end zones to prove it as well, with the new stadium rentals coming in.
I can't wait. Oh, I can't wait to see that. Yeah, that's going to be awesome.
I'm kind of going to be disappointed that my first visit to Foxborough is going to be while it's under renovations, but I'm thinking it may have to become a yearly trip. One of the other Patriots memorabilia I have on my desk is a piece of turf in a frame from, I think, the it was used between 2006 to 2010.
Nice. You know what you could do, Griff, though? If that side of the end zone was under construction, oh, kick ass. Look at that. That's nice. That's a nice little keepsake. You know what you do is when you visit and that part of the end zone is under construction, what you do is you find something you can either scratch your name in or like some cement you can put your feet, like a handprint or something in. Just like when some Red Sox fans were working on the new Yankee Stadium and they threw a David Ortiz jersey underneath it and they tried to sneak that in and ultimately it had to be like unearthed or something like that. Because they didn't want there to be a curse in the new stadium. Like, go ahead and just like put your own little impression there. Like, leave your own little mark in there. Like, just like be a part of the new piece and the new heritage and new tradition at the Razor, kid.
I love that. I'm going to keep that. That one's going to stay in the back of my mind for whenever I get down there. Apart from me spending an ungodly amount and kicking the crap out of my Visa gift card when I go inside the Patriots Pro Shop. Because I just know that's going to happen. You know what, though? Like, you're right, though, in the sense where, look, a lot of guys, like, I know Devin McCourty is going to be like, yeah, you know what, sign me up, team deal or whatever. J.C. Jackson, too, it's like I said, I have a friend who's a Jets fan who's on me, who's basically saying, like, oh, the Jets have something planned. What do you feel about the Jets going there? I'm just like, look, or he was even shocked that we didn't sign him to the tag. And I said, if we had given him the tag, it would have screwed us long for the cap because we have 27 mil.
Because you would have had to have cleared an extra $10 million in space in order to make the tag work. It just wasn't going to happen. It's not last offseason. We can't get drunk on the idea that every offseason is going to have the Patriots as the richest free agency team with the deepest pockets.
Where I went into last offseason being like, okay, I wanted Hunter Henry. That was a tight end I wanted. And I remember I was in the car. Well, at the time, she was my girlfriend. And she's like, the Patriots signed someone. I'm like, oh, really? Who? She's like, she mispronounced it, but she said Jonnu Smith. And I was like, okay, cool. So I was like, you know what? We got Jonnu. I was okay with it. Next day I'm at work, boom. I think it was Diana Rossini or Schefter. It was just like, yeah. So we signed, it was like Hunter Henry signed the Patriots. I'm just like, all right, cool. It's just like the Seinfeld reference. More anything, more everything. I think I screwed that one up. but you know what I mean, though, right? It was like the best of both worlds scenario. And then with this year, though, I have to look at it from a fan perspective where, look, if we're in Phoenix this year, great. I don't write the scripts. I just read the script and know what's on it. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking at this team that they have a window to compete and win in, and I just want to see this team be consistently winning football games. That's what I care about right now. To get a deep run in the playoffs and potentially get number seven and become the greatest franchise all time that's not named Tom Brady, that would be awesome too. But my big concern right now is just, look, knowing that every Sunday I have a football team that I can trust. And as long as Belichick's at the helm, that's something that I can take solace and pride in.
Look, be fun, be entertaining, be a diversion, be worth the time that we invest in it both on Sundays and during the other 6 days of the week where there's not football. And then above all, like, yeah, give me a good product. Give me something I can take pride in. Make it worth watching. Let's have fun doing this. And if I can say one thing, you know, one thing looking forward and one thing looking back, let's clean up all the mistakes that were very uncharacteristic, very unpatriot way, very un-Belichickian of last year's team. And then going forward, you know, let's just continue. Like I said, top priority, whatever it is, whether it's just coaches, whether it's weapons, whether it's receivers, whether it's scheme, continue with the development of Mac Jones and let him try to reach his true potential, bulk up, get him stronger, get him ready. You know, for dealing with the elements, dealing with a much more difficult AFC East. And just, yeah, continue being the Patriots. No one should, by any stretch, continue to think of these as the same Patriots, even though the logo is the same, the address is the same, and the coach continues to be the same as the Patriots of 2001 through 2019. It's a different team. It's a different time. So the product is invariably going to look similar, yet be different. So all I can ask, be fun, make it easier for me to watch the games with the kids, make it more fun, make it more enjoyable when I watch with my friends. Give me something compelling to talk about when I'm doing my work, whether it's the stuff I do on my own or professionally for the Patriots, the radio or TV, wherever it may be. And again, back to square one, just make it fun. That's all any of us can ask. It's sports. Like the whole point of this is just to, like, to give us something to talk about, to make the journey a little more enjoyable. Make it fun, Griff. as long as like watching Pat's games isn't a chore, isn't it, you know, doesn't feel disrespectful, doesn't feel like a waste of time, I can't ask for anything else.
And also, too, the one other point I want to make that I think you'll agree with is, and make us drink not for the wrong reasons, but for the right reasons on Sundays. It doesn't, like, you know, make you want to do, like, make, like I said, make you drink for any of the wrong reasons. Also, one other point I wanted to make to you off air that I didn't is another reason why I'm actually, I think I'm still as big a Patriots fan as I am and committed to this team, is that the feeds that I would get on the cable channels growing up were all the Boston feeds. So I'd get WBC, Fox 25, NBC 10, I want to say. And so every Sunday, what would I do from 11:30 to 12? Watch Patriots game day on CBS. So that's why I'm so ingrained in the team as well. Like, look, I know, like, for example, I can think of names off the top of my head. Mike Reese, Steve Burton.
Yes. They're local legends. They're family. They all fit. They all, yeah. I honestly feel as close to them as I do half my own actual family. Like
your they're
like
because you.
Yeah, they were well. Like, yeah, and Fourier is something. Christian Fourier is someone I've worked with Fourier now for a while, and is a good buddy who I love to death. Like, but and though all those other guys, even though I only see them, you know, every now and again or so, like they come into your lives so often. Yeah, you feel like you have a connection with these players, like these media members. The voices, like the white noise, the background that you fall asleep to, that you replay time and again, that host the pregame and the postgame, you see them all the time. Like they're in your living room more often, usually as pandemic or not, Griff, than actual, aside from like a wife, you know, maybe your parents, good neighbors, or your kids, like they're in your house more often than anyone else's. So no wonder why we feel like we have a connection and a kinship with them. They're family to us.
Exactly.
It's great. And that's why to me, sports always has been and will always be the ultimate connective, emotionally connective tissue. And that's why it matters so much.
100%. And also, too, the other reason why I also love the song Your Love by The Outfield. I have no problem admitting that one either. It always makes me feel about the Patriots and that cardiac-inducing 2015 divisional game against the Baltimore Ravens where we were down 14-0, tied it up, 28-24, 28-28 on the Edelman to Amendola play, and then Brady hit JoJo LaFell for the game-winning touchdown.
Mighty in the bank.
Yep. And also, yeah. Who also caught a touchdown in Super Bowl 49.
First touchdown in Super Bowl 49, yeah.
Both games called on NBC, too.
By Al and Chris, too. Just epic. Yep. Want to talk about an epic postseason run for them by them. It was awesome. Absolutely awesome.
Exactly. 100%. Also the one other thing I want to add, I don't want to ask you, I just want to say, because I saw this on Get Up today, and I feel like a lot of the times when I watch Get Up clips on YouTube, it makes me question why did I click on this in the first place. Is for everyone questioning who's
you're like the rest of us, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. First take, I don't mind, especially tomorrow's Screaming Uncles show, which I gotta say I love because that's what it is. That's every uncle at every family function ever, no matter where you live in the world. Is about who's calling the plays in New England offensively. And I'm going to say this right now. It's not going to be someone who you think now. I don't think you can predict that so far out where, oh, it's going to be Belichick. Oh, it's going to be Judge and Patricia. No. Patricia came back last year. Judge came back this year. I still feel like their roles aren't going to be as big as people think. Give it time because, you know what, at the end of the day, all aboard the crazy train because it's just going to keep on rolling in Foxborough.
My guess is that you'll see Matt Patricia continue in that sort of part GM, part conciliary to Belichick, like an Ernie Adams 2.0 for a new generation because he respects his football mind and experience. He's coached offensive line. He's been a defensive coordinator. He's been a head coach. Doesn't matter which ones he was necessarily the best at or kind of sucked at. And I'm sure we can come up with that power ranking and pecking order real quick.
Yep.
But he fills an important number of roles. I think you'll see Joe Judge as sort of like a quality control overall offensive assistant, again, doing a lot of jobs as he traveled down the Josh McDaniels reclamation highway and took the Patrick Chung exit to come back and fix his career where he really made a name for himself and began it. Nick Haley is the guy, the tight ends coach who's been there the last 7 years. To me, that was the name on the piece of paper Belichick slid across to McDaniels and said, you can take whatever other coaches you want. You can't take this guy. And so I think he's going to be the one who's going to be like McDaniels, have been around, studied from the best, and then get a chance to cut his teeth. Will not get named offensive coordinator this year, But Dante Scarnecchia said it best. Tight ends coaches are the ones who know the offense better than anyone else because they need to know all the line calls. They need to know where every receiver is. They know what the quarterback is doing, what the running backs are doing, because they're all their offensive linemen and their receivers and sometimes running backs. So I think hope he does a great job, but he seems like the right man for the job, all things considered.
And then we'll see what happens with Ivan Fears as well, who obviously has been with the Patriots longer than I've been alive, actually. I'm 28 now. I think he's been with the team, like, probably, if not as long, longer than, like I said, I've been alive.
Yeah.
Well, I know and by the way, at the beginning of the show, when I said biggest guest, I mean biggest guest in sense of social media following, Twitter following, my biggest guest at the time was 52. I believe you're at 55K, so that's where I say biggest. But I want to give you a second, Fitzy, just to go on the air and say, if you know, maybe if there's someone out there who doesn't exactly know who you are, or if there's someone not in Patriot land who wants to find out what your Twitter handle is, what your Instagram, YouTube, you name it, on social media, plug yourself away. And folks, links will be in the bio to everything.
Well, thank you very much, Griff Dog. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've enjoyed parsing over a nice medium rare steak by Bourguignon over the last hour or so. Thank you. Merci beaucoup. It's been fantastique et merveilleux. Je suis a fan of the Patriots, and I always love doing stuff like this. It doesn't matter if someone's doing podcast one, podcast 156. I love every chance to wax Pats-tastic and chop it up with a good fan and a good man like yourself. You can follow me on the socials at FitzyGFY, TikTok, Instagram, my face, FacePlace, cookbook, lookbook, whatever it is, wherever you can find people talking about the topics of the day, yelling at each other about politics, gasoline prices, and football. That's where I'll be, usually with a cold beer in hand and looking for a good time, because I do this for fun. So please try not to be a dink when you come across my path and say hello. I work for the Patriots, so you can see me at the game, all the home games, and you can listen to me on WEEI 93.7 FM in Boston at WEEI.com. And sometimes you never know, you might catch me on the TV on the NFL Network talking about the Patriots or whatever else. But I love me some Patriots, and we got the best team, the best coach, the best owner, and the best fans. And I will never apologize about loving them more than anything else except for my own family in this world, Griff.
I'm the exact same way. And also, too, who will be a part of an Apple TV docuseries coming up very soon based on the book The Dynasty by Jeff Benedict, which Patriots fans, I've preached this before. If you've not read that book, read that
book. It's great. It's on the shelf right behind me. I had a chance to interview Jeff a while ago, and I'm looking forward to catching up with him again when it comes out. Great guy, great book, great access, great read, total 500 pages of pure, unadulterated, grade A Patriots porn.
It is somewhere in that nightstand over where that TV is in the corner. It's in that drawer right there. But I have read that book. It is a great book.
where all the adult material is kept.
Yes, right above the penthouse forums. But anyway, folks, that's going to do it for episode number 156 of YWC Football Talk. As always, we are sponsored here by BetStamp for the best odds, for the best shopping of odds for any sport. Download the app, promo code GriffB. Link is in the bio to everything. But for Fitzy, for Griff, this podcast was a long time in the making, but I'm a very, very patient Patriots fan from Canada. And folks, I'll be back for more YWC Football Talk as we're just getting into the meat potatoes of the NFL offseason. And as always, go Pats.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamscore.com.